I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Pennsylvania is living up to its reputation as a battleground state. While votes are still being tallied from mail-in ballots, Trump's campaign lawyers were in Philadelphia yesterday, charging without evidence that there was voter fraud giving Biden a, quote, backdoor victory with late illegal ballots. They have filed a number of lawsuits to stop or slow the vote count. Governor Tom Wolf called the allegation of fraud disgraceful and said every vote would be counted. Coming up, we're going to talk more about these and other election-related lawsuits. But as I said, most of the ballots in Pennsylvania have been counted, and Trump is ahead by about 159,000 votes, although his lead has been shrinking. Joining us is Katie Meyer, our tireless reporter for WHYY. She has been all over the airwaves talking about the election in Pennsylvania, including on Radio Times. And Katie, nice to have you back with us on the show.
It's my pleasure.
Also with us is John Micek. He's editor-in-chief of the Pennsylvania Capital Star. And John, it's been a little while. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
And you too, Marty. Long time no chat.
Absolutely. Now, my understanding is something like more than 6 million votes have been cast in Pennsylvania. Katie, do we know how many are left to be counted?
So there's been, you know, some various estimates on this just because we're waiting for some updates from the Department of State. But what I can tell you is it's somewhere in the ballpark of like the 400,000 to 500,000 range. My last count was 488,000. I'm expecting that's going to go down fairly soon as we get a bunch of updates from states or from counties, rather. But it's not all tabulated yet.
And, John, why is this taking so long?
There were a lot of ballots, Marty, as you said a moment ago. 3.2 million mail-in ballots were cast because of the pandemic. Pennsylvania is relatively new to the mail-in ballot game, and because Governor Tom Wolf and the Republican-controlled General Assembly weren't able to reach an agreement on opening those envelopes earlier, anywhere between 3 and 21 days, counties started opening them at most counties, 60 out of 67, started opening them at 7 o'clock in the morning on Tuesday. Seven more counties started counting on Wednesday. So it's just taken a while because there's a lot of paper to get through.
And it sounds like the legislature and the governor said that the counting cannot start, John, until 7 o'clock on November 3rd.
Exactly right.
To you, Katie, I'm assuming we're talking mail-in ballots, correct? Those are the ones still to be counted?
Yes, exactly. In-person votes have pretty much all been tabulated at this point. There's always some, situations where, you know, a vote has to go through and maybe there's a provisional ballot that was cast or it has to be contested for some reason. But really, with the outlying pool of ballots is almost entirely mail-in ballots. And the reason, by the way, for people who like are watching the numbers being like, why are people saying that Joe
exactly.
Biden has a good chance here? Mail ballots have skewed just by and large in Biden's favor. I've been kind of crunching it, and we're going to get updated numbers again, hopefully relatively soon.
Good.
But in the 70s, Biden's been getting around 70% of the ballots that have been returned, the mail ballots that have been returned. Trump's been getting around 21%. So again, this could change a little bit, but that's the kind of returns you're seeing.
And that would be then 70% of the 488,000 ballots, Katie, that have yet to be counted, correct? I mean, if you're going to do the math.
Sure, and I should actually say, so 70%, Marty's on the lower end.
Okay.
I've had it at like 78% most consistently. And a lot of ballots are coming in from Philly, which is, as you know, a liberal area, so that could be higher in those places. But across the state, even in Republican areas, yeah, high 70s pretty consistently for Biden. Again, I don't want to overpromise anything for people who support him or are looking for him to win Pennsylvania.
Right.
But that's been, again, a trend that we have seen.
And John, looking across the state, I mean, we're Katie and I are talking here in the Philadelphia area, but looking across the state and you're in Harrisburg, any trends that seem unique to 2020 when it comes to who voted and who voted for whom?
You know, Marty, I've got a map up of the state here in one of my monitors, and it's extraordinary, the sort of the sea of red across the state and the oases of blue, Allegheny County, Dauphin County, of course, Philly and the Burbs, Biden's native turf up there in Lackawanna County. and Center County as well. I mean, we know that young voters came out in big numbers. We know that, you know, seniors came out, and Biden managed to win some of those over in the final days. But, you know, what's kind of extraordinary about this is we're talking about putting Biden in the road to a potential Biden win. But, you know, it's still very, even if Donald Trump goes down to defeat, it's going to end up being Donald Trump's America, looking at sort of the redness of the state map here.
Even though those red parts of the map are more rural, so there are less people, but nonetheless, it looks largely red.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some interesting stuff as well. I mean, Joe Biden flipped back north. It looks like he's on track, pardon me, to flip back Northampton County, which Donald Trump took in 2016. Bucks County is on the bubble right now. I'm sorry, he's pulled ahead in Bucks County, 49-48. That was a county that Hillary Clinton carried by one percentage point in 2016. We'll have to see if that trend holds.
And who pulled ahead in Bucks County?
So I'm looking at the latest NBC, numbers. When I woke up this morning, Trump was ahead by a percentage point. It is now flipped 49-48 to Joe Biden.
We got some very close races going on here. Katie Meyer, how about for Philadelphia? What's happening in the biggest city in Pennsylvania?
So we just got an infusion of ballots in from Philly. I haven't really had time yet because this just happened while I was on hold with you, actually. Haven't had time to look at those. But basically, the count continues. Philly has a lot of outstanding ballots. And so we are going to have to just wait and see what happens with that. I mean, listen, Philly, we know, is going to be pretty big margins for Trump. There have been some questions for Biden.
For Biden.
And there have been some questions about whether turnout's going to be as high as it was in 2016. That's, again, kind of a wait and see situation.
You know, it's funny. I was driving down driving down Route 1, starting at the very top, which is Northeast Philly, and going, you know, into the Schuylkill Expressway. And Katie, it was so interesting. At the very top of Northeast Philly, all the signs were Trump, 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 Trump. I got to about Grant Avenue or Castor Avenue, and it went Biden, 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 Biden. What does that tell us about Philadelphia?
Just tells us that Philadelphia is not so much a city divided, but we've always had these sort of partisan regional divisions in Philly. You know, there's still parts of South Philly, for instance, that are fairly Republican. And obviously, we just saw, you know, Martina White in the State House still hanging on to her sort of North Philly district there. And it looks like she may be able to pull off a win there. So, again, it is a blue city. It's a very blue city, but it's not an entirely blue city. You know, it takes all kinds.
Here's a question for you, Katie. Someone said, have Katie speak to the mail-in vote tracker. I was very confused. It said vote recorded, which does not mean that it was actually counted. Can you deconstruct that?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have had a lot of questions about the mail-in vote tracker.
Did we lose Katie? I think we did. Can you pick that up, John Micek?
So the mail-in vote tracker, I believe there's the caller talking about the confirmation email that people get back after they've cast their mail-in ballot.
You know, I'm not sure I can answer that. She's back. Okay, Katie's back. We lost her
for
a second.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we did. We lost you for a second, but now you're back. So, finish your thought if you don't mind. Yeah, do we have Katie?
Oh, phenomenal.
Okay. Somehow we have lost Katie.
What was your question, Marty?
Okay, that's okay.
I was getting a call.
That's okay. Have Katie speak to the mail. This is live radio. We have to get used to this by now. Have Katie speak to the mail-in vote tracker. I was very confused. It said vote recorded, which does not mean that it was actually counted. Can you speak to that? I think we're having some kind of
problem. Sorry, you can hear me now?
I can hear you now. You know what? Let me just move on. Sorry about that. I don't think we're. Are we connected to Katie? Let me just make sure that she can hear us. I don't think she can hear us. Okay, let me move on with John Micek, and we'll try to get that figured out during the break. John, as you look across the state, and I'm even curious about some of these down-ballot races. We've got the treasurer, mm-hmm. we've got the attorney general, we've got the auditor, we've got a lot going on. We've got some congressional races, and we have the legislature itself. How about how about these more sort of statewide races? Where do things stand?
I'm pulling up that data even as we speak, Marty. I mean, keeping in mind, of course, that we are not finished counting.
No.
If we proceed down the ballot, Josh Shapiro, the attorney general, is ahead by a shade over Heather Heidelbaugh, his Republican opponent. Nina Ahmad, the Democratic former Democratic deputy Philly mayor, who is running for the open auditor general seat, is trailing at the moment. Again, this is all unofficial tallies. The Republican right. Timothy DeFore of Dauphin County, and in the race for state treasurer, Joe Torsella, at the moment, according to Department of State data, is trailing his Republican challenger Stacey Garrity. In the race for the General Assembly, it looks like Republicans picked up some seats in the state House. Democrats have been working on a two-cycle strategy of trying to flip the chamber. All 203 seats were up for re-election this fall. Dems needed 9 seats to take control. That may not be in the cards. Some of the folks they had been hoping to beat Republican incumbents, particularly, which is ironic given that Dauphin County appears to be blue for Joe Biden. Those down ballot candidates did not get over the goal line, it looks like. In the Senate, you got two Democrats in Allegheny County, Jim Brewster and Pam Iovino, who are hanging on by their fingernails. But it does look like a guy from your neck of the woods, Tom Killian from Delaware County, may be out of a job when the dust settles.
Well, that's interesting. And do the Republicans control the Senate as they have been doing since, I think, 1994?
Since Ulysses S. Grant, it feels like.
Since
now.
Ulysses yeah, S. Grant, okay.
No, they
even longer.
The Republicans have had control of the Senate since 1994-ish, the Newt Gingrich wave. The House briefly flipped in 2006. Dems had it in 2010. It's shifted back to Republican control in that year, and the GOP has had the chamber ever since.
And Katie, we have you back, I believe, on a cell phone, and we're almost up on a break. Anything you want to weigh in just really quickly on the legislature in Pennsylvania?
Well, I think sounds like John covered it pretty well. I mean, I think certainly those competitive seats in the Southwest are going to be the most interesting ones. I think Democrats have not done quite as well as they expected to. But of course, you know, Marty, like we're still expecting a lot of votes to come in. We still have a lot of outstanding stuff to count.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Katie Meyer, she's a reporter for WHYY, John Micek, editor-in-chief of the Pennsylvania Capital Star, and we are talking about voting in Pennsylvania. And yes, not everything has been counted yet, but it is still considered a battleground state. There are a number of issues at stake here in Pennsylvania. And you can join us. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can always pick up the phone and give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Do give us a call. Give us a comment. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with John Micek of the Pennsylvania Capital Star, WHYY's Katie Meyer, about where the vote count stands in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, why it's taking so long. There are a lot of votes to count, where the Biden and Trump campaigns and have their support in the Commonwealth, and what this all says about political divisions within the Commonwealth. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Katie, why does Senate Republicans want the Secretary of State, Kathy Buchvar, to resign?
Good question. So this was something that we saw yesterday. Senate Majority Leader Jake Corman called for Bookbart to resign. And this, I think, you know, there's a lot that goes into these things and sort of a lot of partisan strife that builds up. But the big thing for them was Bookbart gave this guidance to counties concerning mail ballots that Pennsylvania is allowed to accept late. So we mentioned they can come in between November 3rd at 8 p.m. and November 6th at 5 p.m. if they're postmarked before Election Day. Now, the Bookbart, in anticipation of a lawsuit from the Trump administration and from other Republicans, had told counties, okay, put those in separate boxes, keep them separate from the other ballots, and I'll give you further instructions on counting them later. So she gave those instructions right before the election, and she said, you can count them, just, again, keep them separate. Republicans were very upset that she gave this guidance that they should be counted. And they were especially mad that it happened right before the election. So that's kind of what Corman is saying was he believes it was a partisan move aimed at juicing results for Biden because he assumed that those results, those ballots would be mostly from Democrats, which is a fair assumption. I should say, I mean, so Bookbart, first of all, says that, you know, this was totally normal, routine guidance. It wasn't partisan in any way. But also, it's been a relatively small number of these ballots. Of course, they're still coming in. But yesterday, late afternoon, she gave us an update and said that it was across the state in the hundreds, not the thousands. We got an update from Montgomery County yesterday, and they had under 200 of these ballots. And that's a very big county with a lot of absentee votes. So I think the long and short here is it's certainly a big issue. This is also the issue that this late arriving ballot window is what the GOP and the Trump campaign are bringing Pennsylvania to court over. It's going to the Supreme Court probably again very soon. But I think it's important to remember this is at this point a very small number of ballots.
And we're going to pick up on that Supreme Court case with our third guest who is waiting in the wings. To you, John Micek, a question from Billy says, why couldn't the Pennsylvania legislature agree to start the process earlier?
Come to Harrisburg. I'll introduce you to the legislature, Billy.
What does that mean?
That will explain everything. This was something where it was a failure of governance. All around, the Wolf administration and Republicans could not reach agreement on this. A week or so out before they adjourned, the governor said he had reached out to the House Majority Leader Kerry Benninghoff, a Republican of Center County, and tried to get a deal, and they had not been able to reach common ground on this. I mean, I think there was some interest in maybe Katie can buttress my memory on this, but there was some interest at some point. It might have been a 4 to 6 day window that was being sort of bandied around for pre-canvassing, but they weren't even able to get to that. So, you know, part of what Senator Corman is complaining about is a beast of his own creation. Had they been able to reach an agreement on the pre-canvassing window, we would not be talking about allowing these ballots to come in as late. But if they are postmarked before Election Day, they are still valid ballots. We should probably underline that point as well.
And Katie, do we have any timetable about when we think these outstanding ballots will be counted in Pennsylvania?
I mean, I would assume because they can be accepted through 5 p.m. on November 6th. Ideally, I would like to think we'll know soon after that, especially, again, if it's not a great number of ballots. But again, that's one of those things where we're just not going to know until the deadline hits.
Seems like we keep losing Katie Meyer, and I'm sorry to say that, John Micek. Do you want to take that?
Yes.
When do you think we'll know?
So we presume that those last ballots will come in Friday at 5. I would hope that we'd probably know by end of weekend. I think Katie is correct. It's a relatively small number of ballots, is what Kathy Bookfar said on, Thursday, so on Wednesday evening. So it probably ought not to take too terribly long to count those. So it's entirely possible Saturday, Sunday, perhaps. I'm spitballing here, but that sounds like a likely scenario.
Well, you know what? We're going to.
Yeah,
we're
sorry.
Gonna
are you guys.
No, go ahead, Katie.
Can you hear
go
me
ahead.
Again?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Sorry, what I had said, I'm not sure exactly where I had cut out. The deadline is, again, November 6th, which is Friday, and it's 5 p.m. that day. So ideally, I mean, if it's not a huge number of ballots, hopefully we would know soon after that. But again, it just depends on how many there are and how quickly the counties can turn that around and report it to the Department of State.
Well, we're going to leave it there. My thanks to both of you for joining us. Katie Meyer, reporter for WHYY, thanks for joining us once again on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And John Micek, editor-in-chief of the Pennsylvania Capital Star. John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks, Marty. Good talking to you.
Nice talking to you as well. Well, as we know, or as we have learned, this is one of the most litigious presidential campaigns in memory, with an estimated 300 lawsuits filed this year, mostly by Republicans. President Trump has claimed without evidence that there has been pervasive voter fraud and promised in the early hours of Wednesday morning to go to the U.S. Supreme Court. He also falsely claimed that he won the election, including the election here in Pennsylvania, and said the voting must stop. And here in Pennsylvania, there have been a number of lawsuits filed alleging a series of violations, now, some of which of those have been dropped, some have been lost in court. Probably the most significant one involves ballots postmarked by November 3rd that arrive by November 6th. That's tomorrow, Friday. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court said they could be counted. The U.S. Supreme Court let that decision stand for now and reserved the right to revisit it. Well, here to talk about all of this is Nate Persily. He's a professor of law at Stanford Law School, co-director of the Stanford MIT Healthy Elections Project. He's also director of the Stanford Cyber Policy Center and former research director of the Presidential Commission on Election Administration. Nate Persily, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And I should add that you are joining us by Skype. Why has this election faced so many legal challenges?
Well, this election is unprecedented in many respects. I think we knew that there would be a lot of lawsuits even before the pandemic hit, just because the stakes are so high and we are such an equally divided country. But once the pandemic hit, then there were all kinds of legal arguments being made about the changes that needed to be made for the pandemic, whether it's extending deadlines or providing for new modes of voting, and then also responses to those changes. So if a state made a change that one of the other party didn't like, then they would sue. I want to just correct something you said earlier. You said
sure.
Most of the 300 some odd lawsuits were brought by Republicans. Actually, most of those lawsuits were brought by Democrats in the pre-election period. To try to ensure, you know, basically to expand some of these deadlines to protect voter rights, to do some of that. Now, of course, in the post-election period, now we're seeing the lawsuits being brought by Republicans, but that's also because Trump is down in many of these states.
Well, and thank you for that correction. I was going to actually ask you whether I was correct or not, but you clearly corrected me, so I appreciate that. But it is so interesting. On the one hand, we see coming from the Trump campaign, you know, trying to stop votes in some states and trying to encourage votes in other states. And it seems to be where he is winning or where he is losing. From a legal perspective, can you do that?
Well, this is a strange situation because generally when you sue over vote counting, you do it once the votes are counted because you contest the ballots. And we all remember the Supreme Court decision in Bush versus Gore 20 years ago, although I should say my students don't remember it because they don't seem to have been around then.
I remember it very well. Yeah, no, go ahead.
We have, there was a count and then there was a recount and then there were suits about the recount and how to what the rules should be. Right now, we haven't even counted all the ballots. So usually you wait until the count is complete before you end up suing. But here, as you said, there's sort of inconsistent arguments being made, some to make sure the count goes on in Arizona, others to stop the counting in Pennsylvania and elsewhere. This is part of a larger narrative the Trump campaign is saying that the process is rigged and that it's rigged against them and that there's political manipulation. The difficulty is you can't just say that. You have to have some evidence as to why that is happening. And so far, there's been a lot of sort of throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. But that is not atypical in election litigation. These legal issues will be crystallized over the coming days to see whether this election really is within the margin of litigation.
It's so interesting, this whole notion of voter fraud, which, you know, predates what's happening in the 2020 election, going back to voter ID laws. And I can think of other things that we have talked about on Radio Times related to these allegations of voter fraud. And when you dig in and you look at the research, it is minuscule, and yet it still exists as a kind of campaign cudgel. Why is that, Nate Persily?
Well, voter fraud is a kind of catch-all phrase, right? So and as we look at the arguments that are being made in this recount or this counting process and then potentially recount, it's a way of attributing malice to the people who are in charge of the process and to just raise sort of differentiated arguments against the integrity of the count. And so generally speaking, you know, legally, when we think of what ballot fraud is, it is right. The casting of votes by illegal voters or non-existent voters or double voting by any given voter, right? And that, as you said, is infinitesimally small. But if you are just against the process and you use words like fraud, usually alongside rigged and corrupt, it's just a way of saying, well, this process lacked integrity, whether it technically was fraudulent in the legal definition.
Well, let me quote Eric Trump, Rudolph Giuliani. They were in Philadelphia yesterday alleging all sorts of voter fraud. Giuliani saying talked about the quote unquote Democratic crooked machine of Philadelphia. He also said, and this is really pretty bizarre, not a single Republican has been able to look. This would be looking at the ballots. They could be from Mars as far as we're concerned. Joe Biden could have voted 50 times as far as we know, or 500 times. I mean, that's just patently ridiculous, but nonetheless, these things are being said in representation of President Trump.
Well, you can view the live stream of what's happening in the Philadelphia counting facility.
It's
so
actually fascinating. You know, yes.
We can see. I mean, this is one of the ways that the internet is provided for transparency that hasn't existed for some time. But yeah, we've moved from non-existent Americans are voting to foreigners are voting to literally Martians are voting in a quite short period of time here. And so, look, this is not a typical, given our partisan political climate here. And it is, again, a kind of undifferentiated guttural response to corruption in the vote counting process, right? And, you know, we will see whether that gets filtered through legal arguments into some kind of concrete complaint. And there are, as you know, several legal arguments that have been made. And so it depends on whether the courts start taking those seriously as evidence of some sort of more pointed argument about fraud or manipulation.
And I do want to talk about some of these important cases, certainly related to Pennsylvania. But when, for instance, Eric Trump said that there were ballots that had been discovered in drainage ditches, there's apparently no evidence of that. But when things like that are said, is that a form of voter, if not suppression, depression, or just to sort of cast a kind of pall over whatever the results are? I guess the results, if it turns out that President Trump loses the election.
Well, it does call into question the legitimacy of the election, right, and the validity of the result. And this is very concerning. And I think that, you know, we had heard this even before the election, and now that everything is so close, that it does raise alarm bells. And what happens, and this may have been inevitable, but it's particularly true given the margin of victory and now that we're in a sort of close count phase, is that you're going to have half the country unhappy with the result and thinking that the process was manipulated. And that is extremely dangerous. And I think that, you know, we need to be very concerned about how we all talk about this election right now. We need to let the process work itself out. We need to make sure that the election officials who did an incredible job preparing for the pandemic and actually running this election now are given the space to actually count the votes. And then if there are legal deficiencies, let's let the courts deal with it first in the state courts and then ultimately, if necessary, the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, let me ask you about this case that was before the U.S. Supreme Court and could return, this having to do with Pennsylvania State Supreme Court basically saying that if your ballot arrives by November 3rd, it can be counted through November 6th, which is tomorrow. The U.S. Supreme Court took a look at it. This was when there were just eight justices and basically let it stand, but said we could revisit it. What is at stake here, Nate?
Well, not only did they say that the first time, but then they actually did have an opportunity to revisit it in an expedited way when the day after Amy Coney Barrett joined the court. She did not join in consideration of that, but they split 4-4 again, or they didn't. They let it stand again.
Right.
And so let me talk specifically about this case, but also the larger legal issue that it brings up, which could have implications in other states. The first is that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, interpreting the Pennsylvania Constitution, said that given the stress with absentee ballots and the mail system and everything else, if a ballot is postmarked on election day or earlier, but it is received in the 3 days after the election, that it will be counted. The Trump campaign and others have challenged that decision, and they go in. Generally speaking, you might think, well, look, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court would be the final word on state election law, but they went to the U.S. Supreme Court and said, no, this is beyond what the state legislature had provided in the statute, and the U.S. Constitution says the state legislature has the power to determine the process of appointing electors, and so if the state Supreme Court takes on what looks like a legislative role, it's violating the U.S. Constitution. This is an argument that had lived out there since Bush versus Gore and has popped up time and again in some of these late cases. It's important to understand that particular argument because it's not limited to the facts of this case. It could be used in any situation where the plaintiffs feel aggrieved by a state court interpretation, a state administrative interpretation of the law, because then you can go say, well, this goes way beyond what the state legislature had provided, and so therefore we're now in federal court and we say it violates the U.S. Constitution.
Well, you know what, Nate, let's take a very short break because I do want to pick up on several things. It's such an important case, talking with Nate Persily. Again, he's a professor of law at Stanford Law School. We are talking about the number of lawsuits filed this election season. And you can join our conversation. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can pick up the phone and call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We've got many important legal constitutional issues at stake, and we will talk more after this very short break. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen, talking with Stanford University's Nate Persily about some of the legal challenges to the ballot count, especially in Pennsylvania, whether the U.S. Supreme Court will get involved in deciding some of these election results. Nate, let me just pick up on a couple of things, and this is the case that's could go back before the U.S. Supreme Court. It sort of pits the Pennsylvania Supreme Court against the Pennsylvania legislature. But what about those people who cast ballots thinking that they had a green light from the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, that they were allowed to cast their ballots? They didn't do it fraudulently. They abided by the guidelines. If we're talking about voter integrity and ensuring that every vote counts, what happens to them in this argument?
Well, you're making the right argument that will be made through the courts, which is that the argument will be that, look, you have to allow voters who relied not just on the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's decision, but the Supreme Court's letting it stand. You have to allow those votes to count, and to do otherwise violates their fundamental voting rights, which is a violation of the U.S. Constitution. But, you know, there are deadlines. There are going to be some voters who casted votes before election day, who are not going to have their votes counted because Even it may have arrived even after those 3 days. And of course, in many other states, it has to be received by election day. And so this is a problem with absentee ballots, and particularly given the postal service stresses, there are going to be many thousands of ballots that fall into that category.
And what happens? I mean, they get torn up and they don't count?
Well, they get torn up, but they don't count. But the important thing to ask here is, in what context will they matter, right? So if it all comes down to Pennsylvania, and if it all comes down to the absentee ballots after the deadline in Pennsylvania, then you have two constitutional arguments that are at odds with each other. One is the one you made, which is say, look, you have to count every legitimate vote that has been cast under the rules that existed at the time. And the others are going to say, well, no, the rules were incorrect. They were unconstitutional. And so those have to be disqualified. The way that the Democrats or the election officials and certainly the Biden campaign agreed to this, this is one of the reasons they segregated those ballots, that they made sure that they were not intermixed with the entire total. So even if there's a dispute about these late arriving ballots, that it won't have an impact on the overall count.
That they're set aside, but here's the thing. But if the Supreme Court, in its 4-4 decision, said we're going to let this stand and then we'll revisit it, by letting it stand, aren't they letting those votes be counted?
Right. Well, but when they let it stand, it's not like that is some kind of affirmation of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's decision, right? Okay. They're basically saying we're tied and we can't break the tie. And so by virtue of the rules in deciding cases, it goes into effect. Now, but you make another argument here, which is to say that regardless of whether they could decide or not, all the voters knew what the rules were as the election day approached. And so that adds a kind of reliance interest, we as lawyers say, right? They relied on the current state of the law. And so that's another kind of argument that could be powerful if it does end up back at the U.S. Supreme Court, where some justices might say, look, I'm not so sure we got it right in that 4-4 decision, mm-hmm. but nevertheless, we can't cancel the votes after they've been cast.
I'm thinking about military ballots that often do arrive late. I mean, it's not that everything always gets sort of tied up in a neat little bundle, whether it's Election Day or 3 days after Election Day. Is that an important thing to think about?
Yes, and especially in those states now where there's this argument that the late arriving ballots shouldn't count, right, that many states have, rules about the military ballots in particular being received 1 or even 2 weeks after the election is over. So, because we've had a history of soldiers overseas who've ended up voting. And so we don't know how many of, say, those remaining of the votes that are going to be counted or in those 3 days after the election, how many of them are military versus non-military. Mm-hmm. But it's one of the reasons why you can't have a kind of special rule that, all right, only if if it's received by election day should anything count, because there are whole discrete populations that are disadvantaged by that kind of rule.
Here's a comment by Fayadun, who says, let them count the vote, every last one. Elections should be decided by voters, but not judges. But as we know, Nate, judges do get involved in elections.
Well, that's right. And we actually want them to be involved in elections in order to preserve voting rights and to make sure there's no discrimination or otherwise. But here, we're not even there yet. I mean, I do want to emphasize how extraordinary this is, which is that we're in this phase right now where we don't even know what the totals are. And yet there's an effort to stop the counting. Once the totals are there, there's a process for a recount. There's a process for challenging votes. And then we will see where we are after that.
We all know, or most of us know, about Bush v. Gore, which was about the Florida recount. Has the U.S. Supreme Court ever gotten so deeply involved in election results besides Bush v. Gore?
Not in the presidential election. And the framers, of the Constitution didn't contemplate some particular role for the U.S. Supreme Court in the presidency. In fact, the Federalist Papers say exactly that. And so it's only, in Bush versus Gore and in the last 50 years that we had such a strong influence of the Supreme Court and, for that matter, even federal courts on voting rights. You have to remember that there is no right to vote for president in the U.S. Constitution. That was made, and that was reiterated in Bush versus Gore. But because of judicial decisions since the 1960s, principally, we have read into the Constitution a certain protection of voting rights. And so most of the election litigation or even voting litigation that we have in precedent comes from the 1960s to the present. And the amount of election-related litigation has certainly amped up quite a bit since Bush versus Gore in 2000.
That's Nate Persily, professor of law at Stanford Law School, co-director of the Stanford MIT Healthy Elections Project, and director of the Stanford Cyber Policy Center. We are talking about the vote counts, such as they are in Pennsylvania and in other states, some of the challenges to voting and vote counting that are in play in a number of states, including in Pennsylvania. And you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. Questions or comments, 1-888-477-9499. Nate, let me ask you about something that happened in Montgomery County. The Secretary of State, Kathy Buchvar, as I understand it, allowed the county to contact voters. Their ballots could be discredited because of problems with signatures or even some missing envelopes, giving them chance to vote using a provisional ballot. Now, some senators in Harrisburg want her to lose her job over this, but is this unusual from your perspective?
Well, the idea of curing deficiencies in absentee ballots,
yes, curing,
is settled,
right,
law in many states. And what happened here is that there was an issue that was litigated in Pennsylvania about whether the state law required curing to provide the opportunity for curing of absentee ballots. And the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said it didn't require it, but it left open the possibility that it could still be done by jurisdictions. And so that's what's happened in Montgomery County and elsewhere, not only in the Montgomery County lawsuit that was brought by one of the congressional candidates as this come up, but it also has come up in the larger lawsuits against the state of Pennsylvania. But just so the listeners understand, right, the issue here is whether the election officials can, if they detect something wrong, for example, if there's no secrecy sleeve inside the ballot, or if there was no signature, if there's some other deficiency, do you just call up the voter or tell the candidate campaigns to call to get voters who are in this position to say, look, cure this deficiency before the votes are counted. And so that does happen quite a bit. What's different in Pennsylvania is that you had the guidance from the Secretary of State pretty early, just before the election itself.
So was it more of a timing issue than almost anything else?
Well, I think that it made clear what was below the surface in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision. And so it's good that she gave that guidance before the election, because then everyone was on notice that is the process that could be followed. With respect to provisional ballots, right, what the effect of that guidance is to say to voters, hey, if there was a deficiency in your absentee ballot, you can go and vote provisionally in the polling place, and then that will be the ballot that counts, right? So that if it gives them the opportunity to cure on their own any deficiency in the absentee ballot that might have been sort of in limbo in the election office.
And what about election observers? I mean, what do we need to know about the kinds of guidelines about who can do it and literally how close can they get to watching people opening envelopes or putting them into some kind of a, you know, counting computer machine? What do we need to know about that?
So there's sort of general rules on election observers, and then you might think of sort of COVID-related rules on election observers, and we should understand that, you know, COVID not only affected polling places and affected this election generally, but it also affects the vote counting process, because you can't have crowds of six people looking over ballots at the same time. And so Pennsylvania and Philadelphia in particular has gone the extra mile and live streamed the vote counting process. It is, as I understand it, the Trump folks want to be closer to observe the balloting. However, you do have observers to the vote counting process. It's not as, and these were qualified before the election itself. And that's a good thing. You want parties to, you know, it's one Democrat, one Republican to be observing the process to make sure there's no malfeasance. But if there's, you know, if there's a problem, then you have to identify what the problem is. You know, if there's people that they see stuffing ballot boxes or throwing away ballots, then you go into court and you prevent that from happening. But there's no indication of malfeasance at this point.
President Trump, this was early, I think it was 2:30 Wednesday morning, talked about basically winning the election and taking the case to the U.S. Supreme Court. Is that how it works if you're president of the United States?
Well, like this is not a legal treatise that he was delivering there. I mean,
clearly.
The point, yeah. I mean, so. This again is sort of a larger sort of environment setting statement, just as you say, well, this is fraudulent or this is rigged, which is that, look, you can't, there's no special turn off the vote switch at the U.S. Supreme Court, right, that can be flicked. And so you have to have a legal argument as to what the violation of the U.S. Constitution may have been in the vote counting process. You usually, there are probably two types of arguments that would be made. One is that there was discrimination in some way that of the way the ballots were counted, and discrimination on the basis of geography, which was the issue in Bush versus Gore, or certainly right. If it was on the basis of party. The other would be that the state officials strayed so far from the state legislation that they effectively usurped the power of the state legislature.
Here's a note. Corey Lewandowski and Pam Bondi are arguing with the police outside of the convention center. This is in Philadelphia, with a quote unquote document saying they can observe the count. It should be added that Al Schmidt, who's a commissioner in Philadelphia, is a Republican. But, you know, clearly there's a lot of pressure to try to get inside these buildings and to wave documents around. Nate, should we be concerned about this?
Well, temperatures are rising, not just in Philadelphia, but around the country. And so you see it outside the canvassing boards in the election offices in Arizona. You're going to see it in other places. You saw it in Michigan. And so this is cause for concern. But I'm confident that in the next day, we will have a much sort of clearer view of what these vote totals are in Pennsylvania and elsewhere. And then the shift will be from the vote counting process to contesting the vote or recounting the vote. And so that opens up a whole new front for some of these arguments. Hopefully they will be channeled into court and through the administrative process and not sort of remain on the outside.
Yeah, literally. A comment from Lois: I'm worried about slowdowns in the post office. It has been taking longer days to get letters. What does that mean for people's ballots? And I know that that's a concern out there. Let me just read another comment, this one from Tim. He says, our Republican legislature brought this on themselves. They knew exactly how this would play out, and they prohibited counties from processing ballots before Election Day. Unlike other states, they're unhappy now, but it is their own fault. A comment from John: I hope this election leads to some changes in the way we vote, things like a full week of voting so people have more time and it's less crowded. We're almost out of time here, but if this is how we're going to do elections, is there another better way to do it?
Well, there are a lot of reforms that I think are going to come out of this process. Some of them were instituted during the voting. I think that mail voting and increased mail voting is here to stay, not necessarily in Pennsylvania, but in many places in the country. I think that voters are now becoming accustomed to it, and you're going to see quite a few people doing that. The concerns about the Postal Service are legitimate. In fact, there is ongoing litigation in D.C. regarding the Postal Service that they did not comply with a judge's order to sweep the facilities in certain places for ballots. And so pay attention to that. I'm not so sure that it actually implicates as many votes as a lot of people think, but you know, there's still the legal issue there. Your listener is right, which is that Pennsylvania could have made it easier to process these ballots, as did Florida and Arizona, so that you could have counted or processed the ballots for weeks before the election. But the governor and the legislature could not agree on this.
Well, we're going to leave it there. Nate, as always, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. I learned a lot. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Professor of Law at Stanford Law School, again, co-director of the Stanford MIT Healthy Elections Project and director of the Stanford Cyber Policy Center. We began our conversation with John Micek and with WHYY's Katie Meyer. And the votes keep coming in, so do stay tuned to WHYY for all the results. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us.